This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you back again today. So we're ready to move on to fulfilling the expectations. I find this to be a little bit of a complex subject. Expectations. What are the expectations that you're going to be working under this year? Do you know what the expectations are? Whose expectations? What about conflicts in the expectations? Let's begin with, what are God's expectations of you this year? 1 Timothy 4:12. Let no man despise thy youth. A lot of you are youth. Most of us, at least, are close to being youth. But be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. That's God's expectation of you. To be an example of these beautiful traits to your students. And the more you understand that, the more unworthy you should feel to be a teacher. I hope you don't think, even in the deepest secrets of your heart, that your school is lucky to have you for their teacher. They can be glad I said yes. Now, I'm sure we feel called to teach, and it's an honor to teach, and a sense of I'm fulfilling the responsibility that God has given me. And I want to be the best teacher I can be. And a sense of fulfillment in that. But let's never get to the point where we feel, wow, they can be glad I'm the teacher. I'm worthy to be a teacher in that. We lose the humility and the awareness of the expectation that God has on us. Now, yesterday, I talked a good bit about authority. Authority is an amazing concept. And I know I emphasize, teachers, you have the authority. Take the authority that is given you to create the classroom that you need to create. And if there's issues and problems going on in your classroom, it's your problem. You've been vested with the authority. And, of course, we try to put together the authority and responsibility words. Where you have responsibility, you need authority. And when you don't have authority, then apparently it is not your responsibility. I'd like to look at another angle to authority a little bit this morning, first of all. And I'm going to read some verses from Matthew chapter 20. Listen carefully to the context and to what God said, Jesus says about authority. Then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshiping him and desiring a certain thing. And he said unto her, what wilt thou? She saith unto him, grant that these my two sons may sit, the one on the right hand, the other on the left, in thy kingdom. But Jesus answered and said, ye know not what ye ask. Are ye able to drink of the cup that I drink of? And to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they said unto him, we are able. And he saith unto them, ye shall drink indeed of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. But to sit on the right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father. And when the 10 heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. But Jesus called them and said, now listen carefully, ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them, but it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant, even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. So Jesus here is helping us understand the power of authority and the potential of the abuse of authority. We spent our summer, just came back from Saturday, 2 months of our summer in Colombia. And we were working directly with the Venezuelans that are fleeing Venezuela because of the abuse of authority. And it's just a vivid picture of a man, his name is Maduro, who's president, who continues to exercise authority from the top down. And his people are suffering. There's starvation. There's tremendous violence. Jesus says, I want to correct your thinking of authority. Because these people were saying, we would like authority, we would like some prestige, and we would like to be on the left and right hand. It is an amazing story. That somebody would have the audacity to go to Jesus, apparently in the presence even of other people, and say, you know, could we be in this position? I mean, how many spots are in the right and left hand of Jesus in his kingdom? I guess one, right? We'll take up those two places. No wonder they were indignant, saying, come on, let me correct something. We're associating greatness and authority with power and prestige. That's possible as a teacher is to use our authority in a selfish way. Now, it seems like this is kind of the buzzword, this servant education, servant leadership, servant authority, and I'm kind of playing into that, I suppose. But it is a good concept, and a concept that we need to understand as teachers. The more authority you have, the more potential for abuse of that authority, and the more potential to be a servant. So if you teach 10 students, you can serve those 10 students. If you teach 20 students, you will have more opportunity to serve in a different way. Or if you're an administrator, you have even greater possibility to serve more people. So it's a concept I hope you take with you in your school. You know, there is sometimes a kind of a good feeling. You can really tell people what to do, not to do, right? Stop that. Hey, do this. And they do it. It's sort of neat, you know? Especially if you're kind of new at it. It feels good. But if you're motivated by it, it just kind of gives a sense of, you know, little hit there. We'll abuse our authority very quickly. And turn our hearts toward what is best for the student. How can I best serve my students? And the ability to serve is connected to the authority that you have. Because if you wouldn't have authority, you couldn't shape the room for what is best for them rather than what is best for you or the easiest for you as a teacher. Some of that we'll talk about a little later. Let's keep that foremost. Fulfilling the expectations. What does God expect of you as a teacher? And in some ways that feels a little less cluttered than what does my school board expect of me or my church community, because there you find sometimes some conflict. Behold as the most important truth and responsibility to fulfill the expectation that God has for you. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says, moreover, it is required of a steward that a man be found faithful. I love that word. Just be faithful. That's not that hard to get a hold of. Faithfully study your lesson. Faithfully take care of the papers. Faithfully pray for your students. Prepare and present as well as you can. Just be faithful. And that's what God expects of you. And that will put you in the context or in a position where you can fill the other expectations better. All right, we're going to look at various groups of people that have expectations of you. That'd be pretty fascinating. I don't know if you'd have the audacity to do this, but it'd be fascinating to go to various parents and school board members and leaders in your church community, other patrons, and say, give me a few things that you expect of me as a teacher. And would you want to see that list? And some would find some conflict. And I'm not saying this to scare you, but we do need to navigate our way through diversity of expectations. And that sometimes, of course, causes some difficulty. Well, let's look at, and some of these are going to be very brief, very simple. What are the expectations of your school board? I think I mentioned this yesterday. Some of you probably are not really sure what the policies are because there's very little written down. And it's a little more pass it on from one teacher to the next. But where you know there's policy, and undoubtedly there's ways of finding out some basic policy, follow the policies. Follow them. Even if you think they are poor policies. And I'm sure some of you are teaching in a school that is different than where you grew, where you were, went to school. And maybe you taught at a different school and now you're in a second school or a third school. And you find there's policy differences. And it's so easy to be irritated or frustrated or even feeling negative and very, come on, you mean this is how you do it here? When the school where I went to school or the school where I taught before, they did it this way and this way. Fit in. Follow policy. We had a little conversation with a few of you later about this, and I want to emphasize again, respect established culture. I know this is yesterday's discussion, so I'm not going to say much about it. But please, do you not hear me saying, drop your vision. Lower your standards. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm trying to help us think about is it takes time to change people. Okay? It takes time to move people. And it's possible to cut off the support of the very people that you will need as you bring changes. If you do it too soon or arrogantly or in ways that are not careful, take your time to bring those changes. And maybe in time you'll understand that maybe some of those changes aren't necessary or maybe aren't even the best idea, especially as a new teacher. You say, well, I thought this would really work. This would be the way to go, but reality has set in. And this actually, well, I'm glad I didn't try to do that right in the get-go. Other things will be good and important to do, but again, buy your time, as we said. I think your school board expects you to grow as a teacher. Expect you to become a better teacher. I know this can be even a discouraging thing on the negative where it seems like the school board doesn't really expect a lot out of you. Or as one couple of people I was talking to, and this comes across frequently, is that, well, you know, I've taught a few years and to the school board it's just kind of, what do you want? How do you want? You know what that feels like? You know, you give a suggestion, well, what do you think? So you say what you think and, oh, that sounds so good every time. And then there's school boards that it's actually somewhat the other way. Very controlling and micromanaging. And it feels like really hard to move things forward. I'm talking to so many different schools and such a diversity of school boards and experiences with your school board. But they, as a general statement, the school board wants you to grow as a teacher. They're being pretty patient with you to have hired you, don't you think? And in fact, one fascinating thing about the brain is that it is not fully formed until the age of 25. Did you know that? Does your school board know that? But the frontal lobe of the brain, where maybe the part of the brain that is the most responsible for making wise, careful decisions, is actually considered to be formed last. There's final connections in the mid-20s. I don't say that in an ugly way at all. That's how God made you. That's nothing to feel bad about. But some of you are certainly not 25 yet, are you? Grow as a teacher. Look for opportunities. Read good books. Talk to other teachers. Have high ideals. Pursue them carefully. And your school board, I would assume, expects you to teach all the subjects. Now you might say, what the world? Of course. I'm just saying this for the few that might have gone to school where the teacher did not teach all the subjects. And I've talked to teachers and students. So, well, you know, I've got to teach algebra. When I went to school, my teacher didn't like algebra. He or she didn't understand it. And so, you know, we had a few lessons and then we just kind of went away. You know, you just can't do that. Not unless you have special permission from your school. or you work that out for another teacher to teach it. But I'm just saying, it is your responsibility to teach what they've asked you to teach. And I had to teach algebra, and I did not have it in school. Of course, that's hard. Full course of biology, and I really didn't have a full course in school. It's hard. I know it's tough. You're not going to be the best teacher the first year. That's okay. But the responsibility is yours to say, every subject I want to learn to teach well. Again, what a growing experience that is, of course. Real briefly, what are the expectations of your church community? Some of these we don't really like. And I don't know what the expectations of your particular church community, so I've just got a few points. Of course, being a worthy example. You will be seen as an important person in your church community in most settings. Church community knows that the children watch you. If you sleep in church, your patrons care about that. If you're not reverent in church, your parents care about that. Because their children keep a little eye on you, don't they? And you'll find out if you don't know that. Your new teachers, you suddenly become a different person in the eyes of the church community. And people just watch you a little more. It's just, you can't get away from that. The children watch you. How you drive. It should never be heard of you, young man, that you speed or drive stupidly or race or whatever. It's not a worthy example. You can't do that. How you fit in socially matters hugely to your patron body, because they know that their children look up to the teacher, and you might even hear that, when it comes, what we think as parents or the teacher thinks, it's the teacher wins. Now, if that's Ford versus Chevy, that's okay. But there's other subjects that matter a lot more than that. And you don't want to create a loyalty issue, and that's not really what I want to talk about at this point. Just be a worthy example. Develop serious-minded kingdom builders and closely related foster skills to be used in church life. Your church community wants you to take the opportunities that you have at school to develop young people that will be able to lead sing or have topics or teach Sunday school and can be used in evangelism. School is a tremendous place for these things to happen. I do not think that you have to take personal responsibility for your youth group if you've taught a long time and say, I'm responsible for the things that aren't what they should be. But look at your youth group. Think about, have you contributed, done what you could to contribute to the quality of the youth, to the spiritual interest of the youth, to the abilities of the youth to become school teachers and serious-minded kingdom builders? A very broad statement, I know. But again, some of the expectations of the broader community that they want the school to be doing for the church. And sometimes you might feel, well, they're expecting things of me that they don't expect of themselves and of the home. And yes, that's true sometimes. Not usually, but that is sometimes true. More is expected of you in your own personal discipline and in your teaching and what you're doing in the lives of the children that sometimes is expected of the parents. It's true. You can't change it. So just accept that, and rather than become bitter or lash out, accept that these are the expectations that the church community has for me, and embrace them and do what you can to fulfill those expectations. Well, this gets a lot trickier, I think. What are the expectations of the patrons? Wow. I don't really know what to say. I'm going to give a few basic things because it is just so different from school to school and community to community. I'm talking to the teachers here, different times when we get to talk, I hear such a diversity. Some are in schools where there's high expectations. The patrons are behind the school, not just behaviorally, but academically. Okay, that's two different subjects. Sometimes, they're behind us. They want their, discipline problems. But boy, at the end of the day, homework. Get out of school as soon as we can. Other communities, it's not quite that way. There's more support for the education. So I'm going to give a few things. And you might say, that's not that way in our school. That could well be. I realize there's such a diversity. But a few of these, I think, will apply to all patrons, except their child. Except their child. Now, this can be challenging. This can even be frustrating, and this can even be sometimes, are your children the best children in the world? Can't they do anything wrong? You're looking at them and just, really? Wow. Well, I'm a parent. Sometimes we've said every parent should be a teacher first, and every teacher should be a parent first, or it can be both ways. But it does change your perspective of school in some ways. When you have children in school and you're trusting them, keep in mind, teachers, these are not your children. Unless you're teaching your own children, I've done that, it's been quite a delight. But you're not; these are not your children. And so they are coming, parents are trusting you to have tremendous influence on their children that they love dearly. You okay with that? Would you turn your children over to somebody like you? Like they say in the business world, would you do business with yourself? Well, if you would have children, would you? What would you want as a teacher? They want you to accept that their child, whether there's problems with dyslexia or we can call this ADHD. You know, I know a little bit about that. I'm Anthony Dean Hurst, ADH, so I connect well with this subject. Or other learning challenges or social challenges, they expect you to accept and love their child. It's a difficult part of teaching, or a challenging part, I should say, at times of teaching. You know, your students will know quickly, and the other students will know quickly if you're accepting each child and what they bring to the classroom. You know what it feels like to answer the phone and it's the teacher calling? I try to spin this carefully when I call, because I can hear it in the voice different times. I'll call and say, yes, this is Brother Anthony calling. Okay. Now, this has nothing to do about school. I just want to talk. All right. Now, what's wrong with my child? Did something happen? I know what that's like for a co-teacher to say, hey, a little something happened with your child today. Okay. So there are overprotective parents, helicopter parents, we call them sometimes. They want to know what's going on. I'm in the school a lot, and I know that can be challenging and can be overbearing. Do what you can to win the trust of the parents that you do care about their child. And I'll tell you, it doesn't take many mistakes. It doesn't take but one mistake to build suspicion, a little frustration, today your child just did not, whatever. I just didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know what to do with her. You have to spin it in a lot more positive way than that. Be honest, but the moment your patrons think you don't love and accept their child and you're irritated or frustrated, you're off to a bad start. Be a team player with them in raising their child. Be careful where you are in conflict with the values of the parent. A number of years ago, we were interviewing a non-member, even non-Mennonite patron. And of course, you know, what's going through our minds as administration, how's this going to influence our school? And we went, sat down in their home and talked to them and talked about, you know, how this will work. And they said, well, you know, one thing we're really concerned about, and this is them talking now, one thing we're really concerned about is we work hard at teaching our children respect for authority and good manners in some of these things. And we're just concerned if they come to your school, you know, where they lose some of that. Here we were coming to interview them to see if they fit into our school culture, will be negative to our school, and they're saying, well, maybe we'll be negative to them. Oh, they cared so much about, now they did not know us, and we did not know them. They were not saying this in a negative way, but they were concerned. Parents expect you to affirm what they are doing in the life of their child. Now listen, there will be times, most likely, that you're going to feel a conflict of what you think is going on in the home and the values of the home and your values. And you better be pretty careful what you do in those moments. Students will ask you questions. So what do you think about, they'll ask you. Be pretty careful. Because it might well be something that they're suspicious you don't approve of. And they do it, or wear it, or go there, or whatever it might be. And they want to know what you think. You better be very careful in that moment, or you can create a loyalty tug in the hearts of those children. And we just have to be so careful with this, and this becomes especially challenging, especially if you have people from other churches coming and community folks in your school. We were very honest with a patron, potential patron, a year or two ago, complete different background, had no conservative values whatsoever, and it's one of the reasons that I told him we could not accept him and maybe try another school. I said, in our school, we talk about our values in how we dress and non-resistance and those kind of issues. We talk about them. And your child is going to sit there in school and decide, are the teachers right or am I mom and dad right? And that's a conflict that I don't want to create because they are your children. And the loyalty belongs to you as parents. And I'm afraid with the difference, this was not a little difference. This was a world apart in every imaginable way. But they happen to know some of our people and request it. But you create a loyalty conflict, and the child sits there thinking, do I agree with the teacher, or do I agree with my parents? It's a very difficult position to put those children in. It's an emotional pressure they really shouldn't have to deal with. Now, it might happen that they see those differences through observation. That's how it is. And you might be teaching children who come from non-Christian families. They will see that, but do what you can to not accent the difference. Never act astounded that they would do something. Really? You would, your parents do that? Your dad says those words? Really? Oh, that's bad. I have had to say numerous times, you know what? What you say at home is up to you and your parents. But I'm asking you here at school, let's not say that, okay? Because I just don't really want that. I hear that thrown around, and I just, can you understand that? Sure. Okay, they're still going to sit there and say, parents this, the teacher this. But at least do what you can to minimize, rather than accent, that difference. Be a team player with them in raising their children. When there is a difference, if I may say, err on the side of caution. Your parents expect consistency. Your child, their children should not come home and say, whoa, today the teacher was in a bad mood. This is challenging in a larger school when there's multiple teachers. And I'm not really wanting to talk about that right now because we don't have time. But think about, especially your larger schools, but this is true in smaller schools, how to create consistency throughout the school. To me, this is an important, important subject. Because when those children go home from school and they compare the day, what happened? This can be extra recess. This can be fun things like coffee and donuts. This can be how you handle incomplete work or low grades. And if the third grader got really nailed for a late paper, and the eighth grade boy, oh, the teacher just said, don't do it again, and smiled. They got a problem. Okay, you're going to create problems for the home because they're endlessly talking about their teacher. And, we really like this teacher. We don't like this teacher. So I think there's more. The more there's policy throughout the school, even on those subjects of recess, extra fun. I mean, not policy is not the right word for those things, but just communication among the teachers. What are we doing? What do we all think is acceptable? Rather than just leave that go for every teacher. It can create problems in the home as they talk about. The parents are trying to control the conversation around the supper table as they compare teachers and who they like and who they don't, and who's so strict and who's so fun, etc. And then policy and things like homework. I think that might be on the dock, a homework policy. Shape it for however you want. I forgot to bring copies of that. But I would encourage your schools, even small schools, two teachers, homework policies. Here's how we handle late work, low-grade work, so that it's consistent from teacher to teacher and from day to day, as our moods tend to go up and down as well. Well, what are some things that your students expect of you? In some ways, I think this maybe is actually more consistent or even than parents. I just want to say nothing about parents. Some expect no homework. Some expect that there is homework. That's one subject that is you need to find your way. And I just want to give this encouragement. If you're in a community that maybe kind of goes back to fitting into the culture, if you are a high academic person, you love study, you love work, you love making your students work, and you're teaching in a community that is not that way, defer to your community. I think it's way better to have the goodwill of the parents. When that child goes home, if they can fit into what the family wants, then to insist that, well, I'm the teacher, I have the authority. Academics are important. Yes, there's an hour of homework. That's how it is. Come on, they're in high school. Or, hey, you know, that's just who I am. We give lots of homework. Now, I enjoy giving some homework. But if it creates conflict with the parents, fulfill their expectations. And I will say, as a parent, having my children come home and at least being able to contribute to home life and just round out their life with being able to go outside and play and work in the garden and do some other things is actually a very good part of growing up. It's not just books, folks. It isn't. They're in school 6 hours and they can do another hour or two or three. I just think that does not, that's not a rounded way of raising a child. Now, some will have homework. That's another subject. Some will have that. But to make that as your goal and sort of pride yourself in that, well, in our school, we have a lot of homework. And if there's pushback and resistance, adjust accordingly. Or you will create, again, conflict that you just would be better avoiding. Of your students, well, I'm going to go back to this word consistency. They expect you to be a pretty predictable person day after day. One student said, I can tell what my teacher's going to be like that day by how he combs his hair. So folks, comb your hair the same way every day. I don't know if that was true or not, but it might have been. But depending how he or she combed his hair, why, you know, they say, ooh, I don't think it's going to go well today. Looks. Your students should not be doing that. They should not be walking in the door, and they are a little worried, and they're trying to ascertain every day, say, how's it going to go today? Oh, I think he's pretty happy, you know. He's smiling. He's, good morning. And then the next day, you know, it's obviously kind of sullen. Work hard on that. Maybe a little more on that later. Fairness. I would like to suggest that fairness and sameness are not the same thing. Fairness and sameness. Does God treat everybody alike? Doesn't God say that of those who have much opportunity, much will be expected? Those who have less, less will be expected? Those who are given one talent versus five talents, the expectation is different. Sometimes fairness feels like, let's just get this down pat. Now, I know I said that about homework, and I want to make a contrast here. How you handle, as a general statement, late work, irresponsible work, I think some consistent policies help us to navigate our way through that, that is fair and consistent. But even inside of that, there needs to be some flex. But in other areas of expectation, I think we need more flexibility than what we have. If you just take the diversity of ability in your room and then you expect the same performance from student after student, you realize that the difference, one student is working well within their comfort zone, others could do a lot more and are not even challenged, others are over their head dreadfully and hate coming to school because of that. Now, there's no easy answers, and I'm not going to try to give easy answers in 3 minutes. There are no easy answers. I know you cannot pass a student to the next grade unless they completed the previous grade, again, as a general statement. But somehow to build enough of flexibility that you can look at each child and say, I need to some degree, tailor for that student, and for that one, and for that one, and for that one. That means in math you say, well, that problem didn't matter, so I won't mark it wrong. No, that's pretty tough, isn't it? But there's other subjects, other ways that you can encourage a child and adjust to be fair. It's not the same. What if other students say, well, I think you treat that, you know, a little, you know. I almost never have that said. Even students where we adjust the work and quietly walk by the desk and say, we're going to do quite all these problems. Because a child just cannot. Of course, there's limits to doing that. If a child comes and says, well, you adjusted his work. I say, well, you know what? If you need your work adjusted, talk to your parents. And you can call me and we'll discuss what needs to be adjusted. You'll get very few phone calls. Very few. Most students have a sense of, you know what, that person does struggle, and that's okay. And actually, I'm glad that I don't need that adjustment in my work. Fairness and sameness. I want you to think about that. Somehow that we can adjust. I am so burdened when I get the sense that a student hates school because they're never a success. And I want to challenge you with that thought, that you shape your room and your attitude so that every student can be a successful student. That is one difference between Christian education and non-Christian education. Christian education says every student is a creation of God, deserves respect, and can be a success in our school. Because we define success differently and look for ways to affirm that student, adjust what can be adjusted. So every student, as they walk out, if they are doing reasonably what they can do, their reasonable, sustainable best, they can be a successful student. And if we want to just shoot real high up here and kind of keep that, you know, pressure under the students every day, there are students who cannot emotionally cope with that pressure. Expect a positive spirit. You know, you have a life outside of school. And sometimes that life is tough. Can you compartmentalize and not drag too much of that emotion into your school day? That can be tough. Some teachers struggle with this more than others. But there's ups and downs in life. There's good times and there's bad times. Somehow to leave that emotion at the door and to be a positive person. They should not say, well, I believe that person, she's having a rough life. You know, what's going on? And I talked about this a little bit before. And somewhat loosely connected, how you respond to the ups and downs of the day. Sometimes this is, you need to decide in a moment's time. I believe maybe one of you, or maybe more than one of you, are culprit of this story. I just thought about that right now, but I'm going to tell it anyhow. I was teaching Spanish to 9th and 10th grade here a few years ago. And it was the day after the school trip. And I was not along the school trip because I was not the 9th grade teacher, but I just taught Spanish in that. And they had gotten late, back very late, because the bus had broken down. So I walked into the classroom. Very unassuming, all right, ready for, you know, class here, and got my books out. And suddenly, out of absolutely the middle of nowhere, I mean, this was the closest to magic I've ever seen in school, appeared approximately 20 pillows. I'm just, there they were on the desk, and everybody thought. Oh. At that moment, I had to decide, am I going to what am I going to do? Now, they obviously knew me well enough that they at least thought they could get by with this, and one of them was my son. So they figured this is going to be okay. But I'm suspicious. They were slightly nervous how this is going to actually go. So I thought fast, tried to. I had my phone on me. Ah, there was a WhatsApp group made of the patrons of these students the day before because of the school trip. So, phone out. And then, I don't know if I said anything. I said, I'll send that to your parents. And pushed the button and went to all the parents. Well, they didn't. That didn't help. They still was just, they were grinning, of course, trying to act like everything's okay. And I might have muttered something, but I thought, this will maybe at least break it up. So I walked out of the classroom, ran down to the basement, and I hit the fire alarm. These two got up. Some of them grabbed their pillows and headed out the door. So the whole school is watching, grade after grade, about 130, 140 students, grade after grade, walking out a nice road. Hear these big 9th and 10th graders carrying pillows. It was fun. It turned out quite fun and gave me a story to tell and a neat memory. But at those moments where you have to decide, okay, what am I going to do? Scold them, laugh, and say, you know what? That was a good joke. We came back in. They pulled it off. It was funny. I laughed, and we moved on. You know, if you're going to be a teacher, I'm just going to drop this. If you're going to be a teacher that works hard at building positive relationships, there are going to sometimes, and I didn't really feel that way in this case, but I have already in jokes, stunts, they maybe will cross the line sometimes, and you need to just tamp that down a little bit. But I would rather fight that battle than the battle of forever feeling that they're whispering behind my back and they have bad attitudes and they're, you know, and we got this huge wall between us and they walk on one side of them, we walk on the other. It's just that conflict. Some teachers maybe prefer that because they just like that distance and that's just kind of their personality. I encourage you to not fall into that trap. If you have situations where you feel like, wow, you know, I'm just, the respect is low and it's just this endless joke. Okay. Try to ascertain why. But I'd rather fight that battle than the battle at the other extreme end of things. Expect an orderly classroom. I believe we talked about this yesterday. They want an orderly classroom. I just want to emphasize that. They want you to take charge and keep things under control. And let me suggest that the students who need it the most want it the most as well. Okay? The students who need it the most, the ones who just get restless so quickly, who are distracted so quickly, they feel the safest when you create an atmosphere where they can't get out of control. It looks like they want to get out of control. They want to whisper. They want to be foolish. They want to endlessly. It looks like they want to. And if you allow them to, they will, because they can't seemingly control themselves. But deep down in, they want so badly the security of a teacher that helps them to behave. Please remember that. Don't be intimidated by those students. They are longing for your help. They're crying for your help because they don't have the personal ability, seemingly, to control their behavior. That's what your job is. Help them to control their behavior. And an orderly classroom is one of the best ways to do that. Last of all, reasonable variety and fresh ideas. Teachers, please don't fall into this trap. I want my students to like me. I'm going to have a fun day every week. Or I want to do something special every day. Teachers sometimes, new teachers, the greatest fear is my students won't like me. Right? I like asking teachers, so how do you feel about being a new teacher? What are you afraid? Well, I really want my students to like me. I really want a good relationship. Of course you want a good relationship. Of course you want them to like you. But if that's what drives how you run your classroom, you're going to be tired of your students by Thanksgiving, and they're going to be tired of you. All right? Students like most days. I think I'm correct here. Students like most days to be what they expected. Just a methodical,
cheerful, positive spirit in the room and an atmosphere. Oh, of course there's some diversity. Of course we do special projects. Of course there's times we change things up. But to be driven by a desire that they like me, and so we have to have a lot of fun in school. And so I'm just endlessly saying, hey, why don't we do this? And then, oh, well, let's go sing instead of having class. I'm going to want to sing instead of English class. Of course. Okay, no English today. Then, hey, why don't we do this? And just kind of a sense of, you're always trying to make sure that they like this. They will be very restless. Because they're not, especially some students, simply cannot handle that. They feel the safest and most secure, but most days are very predictable. Again, not diminishing the fact that we need reasonable variety and fresh ideas. But remember, your job is to create an atmosphere that is not fun per se, but is secure and the children can do well. Thank you for your attention. One little announcement for the lunch line, just an encouragement to try to keep the line going and save your visiting before and after. That as you get your food, to try to keep the line moving along. There's a lot of people to get through the two lines. Stand for prayer. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you again for this day and for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for the encouragement and energy we find in being together as teachers. Lord, as I think of the hundreds, maybe even thousands of students that will be affected by these teachers, Lord, I pray for grace and wisdom, calmness, and understanding of what the expectations are from many different perspectives and people. Give us humility, Lord, that we would work under your blessing and the blessing of others. We just pray that you would go before us and lead us in your ways and your paths. Thank you for the food we have today. Pray that we would use the good things that we have to your glory and to fulfill the purpose for which you created us. In Jesus' name, amen.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.